This is JLPT Bootcamp, the ultimate guide to passing the JLPT in less time with less pain. This is the JLPT Bootcamp podcast with your host, Mac, and this is episode 153, The Inevitable Catch-Up Phase. This week, doing a How I Study podcast. I do one of these about once a month, and then I have another podcast that comes out about once a month about culture. But talking about what I'm doing to study for the JLPT, what's effective and what's not effective, that's what's going on this podcast. So in December in Japan, it's always like just unbelievably busy time. I mean, this is like there's, you know, Christmas, Bonen, Kai, party season. Then you have New Year's cards to design and write. And finally, there's this kind of, I guess the best translation is big cleaning, where you throw out as much of the old as you can by the end of the year to make way for the new. Then, after New Year's, you have your first visit to the shrine, first visits and formalities to all your business contacts, you know, giving of gifts and things. And if you still have enough energy, there's even New Year parties for the New Year to welcome in the New Year. So needless to say, I got way behind with my studying. I posted the graphics with this post on the website, but basically, on Memrise, there's a kind of a graph, if you have a premium account, there's a graphic that will show what, you know, how many words you've learned, how many words you're forgetting, and there's a red line of the words, number of words you forget, and a green line of number of words you know that you've committed to long-term memory. And so it's kind of funny because this whole last week or so, it's just been kind of, you know, kind of oscillating around. It's the red will go up with a bunch of forgotten words, and then green will go down with all the words, you know, that have disappeared out of my long-term memory, and get back on it, and then it kind of moves and fluctuates back and forth. So, but hopefully, I've kind of gotten a handle on things and getting a little bit back on track. And it's always kind of a game of patience, I think. I've written about this before, but you know, if you do get off track, if you try to go too fast and try to catch up very quickly, you just start kind of mindlessly punching in words and not retaining that much. And that's not really the point with SRS. A lot of people, especially with the gaming of it and things like that, they start thinking about the points and they want to get so many points and so much time and yada, yada, yada. And realistically, SRS, what SRS is doing is it's spacing these things out so that you, you at good intervals, so that you are reviewed, you are kind of pressured to review the word just as you're about to forget it, is the theory at least. It doesn't exactly mean that you need to kind of push your way through it, even if you've got 800 words backed up. You really got to take your time with each word and kind of think through it and make sure you do know it. Just because you guessed it correctly or something, that's not exactly, you don't exactly know it. That's kind of why I prefer Anki sometimes, because with Anki sometimes you can make just a random guess and you're pretty close, or you don't quite make it or something, and then you can mark your own self, like you can kind of mark it like, well, I kind of know, or I really know, and so you get review on it more. Whereas Memrise, you either know it or you don't, which is good and bad, because it's very strict, which means you have to really know the words. But it's also bad in the sense that you can't really judge yourself. You guess correctly, and then it'll just keep going for the next, you know, you'll see it in another month or something later, when really you should be reviewing it a little bit earlier. So it's kind of a give and take when you're trying to catch up. And so I kind of basically took 2 weeks off from studying, not really, but last year, I did take 2 weeks off from studying last year when I was on vacation. I didn't really study at all and kind of came back with, I think, like 600 or 800 words to kind of drill through. And it took me a good month to catch up. But this time around, I think with special help from my Memorize account, I have gotten all caught up. I honestly do like the premium account. Again, full disclosure, I get access to the premium account for free for helping out at Memorize. So I'm obviously biased. If I had to pay for it, I think it's worth it because it really kind of maximizes your time and you can see what you're missing and what's kind of going on and your situation, so to speak. So it's very cool. Anyway, in other news, I kind of got a new job. Not really a new job, but to be more specific, I got kind of another contract, another task. I work as a freelance teacher here in the general Kansai area. And so what that basically means is that you're kind of hopping between jobs and picking up things here and there and doing odd, random things. But I took on kind of a new contract that I'm hoping that I'll be able to use more Japanese, a lot more, because I'm not really getting any natural practice with Japanese. I know that sounds really strange for people that are outside of Japan and some people that are in Japan, but if you're teaching English and that's your job here, you actually don't need Japanese at all. There's a lot of people, like lifers, that have been here for 10, 20, almost 30 years, that they have never really learned Japanese beyond maybe some small talk type stuff, because you don't really need it if you're going to stick in the English teaching industry. I don't really want to stick in the English teaching industry. I also kind of want to know what's going on around me, in the country that I live in, that I've called home for the last 10 years. So I've been obviously studying Japanese a lot. But this new job will hopefully give me a little bit more exposure. There's a couple of meetings I have to go to that are all going to be in Japanese. So I'll have to listen and respond in Japanese. I'm hoping that will increase my speaking ability a little bit, because it's just really kind of beyond basic conversation. If I have to explain something complicated, I really get hung up in Japanese these days, where it wasn't such a problem before. I guess explaining situations in any language, even if it's your native language, can be quite difficult. But I just kind of want to get more into the swing of things and make more things more automatic instead of more prepared, which is kind of where I've been in the last couple of months. And another thing is I've gotten a lot of emails lately about how to go about passing N1. And real quick disclaimer, I don't really want to say I've come close, but I've gotten decent failing scores on N1, but I haven't passed N1 yet. So this is advice from someone who hasn't passed N1. So just take that as the background here. But and although I haven't passed N1, I've been in contact with a lot of folks that have, obviously here living in Japan, and with the blog, comments, interviewing people, email exchanges and things. I've worked with a few people that have passed the test and kind of picked their brains and try to tease out, the key factors of what it takes to get from N2 to N1, which is, I think With the tests, N5, N4, N3, you can get to N3 without really, sticking to the drill books, doing some reading, doing just regular studying. N2, you have to have listening skills. You have to have reading skills to pass that test. You just have to have them. You have to have basic, at least basic, but you should have, good note-taking skills, good ability to skim through reading. It doesn't have to be perfect, but a pretty good ability to do that. The jump between N2 and N1 is a whole nother level, because there's a lot of things that just really shift at that level. A couple things is, like, for example, the grammar section of N1 doesn't really come from a set list of grammar points. It doesn't really, like, for N2, you could study a grammar, N2 grammar textbook, I'm using air quotes here, master it, know it back and forth, and probably go into the test and do pretty well on that section. With N1, you can take an N1 grammar book and master that and do very well with that. Get to the test, and there will be a handful of questions that cover those grammar points. Usually it ends up being around 7 or 8 or so, about half. But the other half are really just kind of, you have to know the language, and you really have to know feelings and the point of the whole sentence, and the point that is trying to be conveyed. Is it a warning? Is it conjecture? Is it a guess? Is it hypothetical situation or something? You have to really know the context from that, which you can only really get from immersion in the language, which does make N1 a truer test of your language ability, whereas before, it really wasn't that much of a test. It was really just study the points and get through it. But you really have to have some kind of immersion in the language. You don't necessarily have to be living in Japan. Statistically speaking, it's a lot easier to pass if you live in Japan. But I know also a lot of people outside of Japan that have passed the exam through some hard work. But you do have to strive for what they call in language learning automaticity. And that's kind of a funny word, because my spell check always throws it out. But it is actually a word that linguists will use, talking about language and making it automatic. Automaticity is basically what it sounds like. It's everything should come to you automatically. If you have to still take some time to translate things to understand them, even if it's at like a more higher level, you haven't quite reached that level yet of automaticity. And I admit that there are times when I have to take a step back and translate a passage, some pieces of a passage, into something and kind of rethink about it in my head to get a good understanding of what it's about. And I believe that's pretty much the hurdle I need to cross in order to pass N1. Personally, I need to stop having to fall back on that. I've been working on that. I've been a little bit too busy at times to really focus on that. But and the thing is I don't have this problem with common materials, letters in the mail, notices, advertisements and such that I get, notices from the bank, because I've got all sorts of, insurance and house loans and junk to read. And I really don't have any issues with that. It's just that on the test, if it's something more abstract or indirect, I really need to take a step back and try to understand as much as I can by doing a little translation in my head. And it's just really just indirect and abstract stuff, like magazine article type stuff. Sometimes they get all hung up on. If it's a story, if it's tips, if it's a notice, if it's a business letter, I can read those no problem, very quickly and easily. But if it's kind of like, if it's an opinion piece, I really, I still kind of struggle with those, which would be mean that I should probably read more of those things. But I haven't had the time to hunt those down and make a habit of reading them. Anyway, you know, and also at this level, at the N1 level, you need to really take a genuine interest in reading and listening to Japanese a lot. You'll need a lot of bulk input in order to bring your vocabulary up to level that is needed for the test. Again, you're dealing with a lot of abstract stuff, a lot of words that when you translate into English, they kind of have the same meaning. So for example, you know, bring, there's an N1 word that's motarasu. And that means like to bring something figuratively. So it's like to bring some kind of force or your strengths or your ability to do something to the table. That, so to speak, you're figuratively bringing something instead of physically bringing something. So there's a lot of these words that you use abstractly. So they're kind of difficult to, you know, imagine in your head, to picture and to use. It's kind of easy to learn a language if it's very physical and you can notice, you can imagine the situations in your head, but you, for N1 level, it's a lot of abstract stuff like that. And so you really need to hear some of the words a couple of times. You can't just have the definition. Even the Japanese definition of the Japanese word will help you more, but you really need to see how it's used and learn the collocations and internalize all that stuff to a general level. I'm not saying that you need to master the Japanese language. Just bring it to a kind of a good automatic level to bring it through and to, you know, to pass the test. I think drill books are still useful at this level, and they give you a decent idea of what to expect on the test, but don't expect them to fully prepare you for the real thing. Kanzen Master is a really useful series, especially the reading series, the grammar series, and the listening series can give you a good idea of what to look out for. But generally speaking, they're too easy compared to the real exam. So if you study those back and forth and really master them, yeah, it's going to help you, but you're still not going to be able to pass the test just by doing that. Whereas probably for most of the other levels, N5 up to N2, you could probably do that and pass the test. So it is quite a big beast to, you know, conquer at the end of the line. And to be truthful, you don't need it for daily life in Japan. It's not really something that's necessary if you're going to live here. Getting jobs in N2 is going to look good, especially if you have some experience with Japanese at another job, or you are pretty fluent with Japanese and you have N2. You're going to get interviews, you're going to get hired, you're going to get jobs. N1 is just, it's just the next rank. You're going to look better on a sheet of paper, and, you know, hopefully get to that. You're going to get into more interviews, but you're still going to be able to have to communicate very well in Japanese speaking and listening, which is something that I have fallen behind in. And so I'm hoping that with this new contract and new job, I'm going to be using a little bit more Japanese to interact with some people. Anyway, how about you? What are you doing this week? How are your studies coming along? If you are studying for the N1, what are you doing to prepare? I'd love to hear from you. This is episode 153 of the podcast. You can leave me a comment for this post on the blog at jlptbootcamp.com. There's also a contact me button that you can click at the top there, and contact me if you have any questions about the JLPT or about living in Japan in general. Or if you really love old-fashioned email, you can email me at mac@jlptbootcamp.com. Of course, you can follow me on Twitter. It's at JLPTHelp, or, of course, twitter.com/JLPTHelp will get you to my page. Or please, by all means, find me on Facebook and like my Facebook page, and you can get all the updates through Facebook that way. So anyway, contact me in one of those gazillion different ways, and keep on studying for studying Japanese and studying for the JLPT. A real quick update, probably around the time that this podcast comes out, the online results will be available. If you registered in Japan, if you registered online in Japan, you can visit the JLPT the site to get your results there, and check out your results. So hopefully you can check those out. I'm hoping that this podcast will come out around then. Maybe it'll come out a little bit later, but check your results online, you'll be getting them in the mail very soon. So until next month, have a good month studying, and I'll talk to you really soon. To claim your free 21-page ebook on the 5 biggest mistakes people make on the JLPT, as well as more tips and tricks to help you pass the Japanese language proficiency test, come visit me at jlptbootcamp.com.